Before we dive into today's episode, I want to tell you about a free three-act worksheet to help you structure your story. Whether you're a plotter or a pantser, a novelist or short fiction writer, this three-act worksheet will help you navigate your material and even begin each new story with a better plan. Download yours at nancypannuccio.com/act. Stop getting stuck in the middle of your draft. Go grab this free worksheet, nancypannuccio.com/act. Telling is useful when you want a brief transition from one scene to another or from one chapter to another. So maybe the characters move to another room or another location altogether, or there's a jump in time, and telling can help that transition. Writer Unleashed is for you, a writer who has a story you want to bring onto the page and into the hearts and minds of readers. I'm Nancy Pannuccio, writer, editor, and writing coach. And each week, we'll explore techniques, mindsets, and inspiration for writing stories readers can't put down. Thanks for spending some time with me today. Now let's begin. Show, don't tell. How often have you heard this same tired advice in a writing group or on the internet or YouTube? Maybe you keep reading and watching videos on how to show rather than tell, but for some reason, it's simply not sinking in. You understand the concept, but when it comes to implementing, it's not as easy as it sounds. So what's the difference between showing and telling? Should show, don't tell be applied to every line and paragraph of a story? Are there times when it's better to tell? When do you show? When do you tell? In this episode, I'm going to tease apart the difference between telling and showing, and then we'll talk about when to tell and when to show and what makes both work together. There's a synergy between telling and showing. You don't just do one or the other arbitrarily. Now, often writers will show things that would be better told, and they tell things that beg to be shown. So let's get right to it. Here's the difference between show and tell. Telling is summary or exposition. It's more direct reporting. It's not filtered through the character's experience. It's often necessary to set the stage, to give the reader necessary information so they can absorb what's going to be shown, or to give context for what's about to happen. Showing allows the reader to participate in the story. The writing creates multisensory images, and the reader is literally transported. They experience the story as though it's happening to them. The author is immersing them into the character's reality. So you need both. You can't and should not show everything. Telling can give the context for what's shown. Here's an example from Joseph Connolly's story, Hard Feelings. I first met Neil and Madeline at dinner at their place. In the car, on the way over, Sally gave me a brief lecture about how Neil and Madeline were different from the people I'm used to, and why certain kinds of humor might not go over. She should have said any kind of humor. Their apartment is decorated in the style I call early college kid. They say they don't care about material things, and it shows. Okay, so now he's going to show us what he just told us. There isn't much furniture, and what there is looks secondhand. The dining room itself, which doubles as a library, has brick and board bookshelves along one wall filled with every book on self-esteem ever written. The table is rectangular, like a conference table, and looming over it is the world's ugliest light fixture. A single white globe hangs from a wire, a clear plastic bell that reminds me of the cone of silence on the old TV show Get Smart. Someone on the show would say, "Lower the cone of silence," and this thing would come down over them. It was supposed to prevent eavesdropping on their conversations, but instead it made them unable to hear each other, and they would sit there trying to shout and no noise would come out. We all sat down at the table and I looked up at the light fixture and said, "Lower the cone of silence." Neil and Madeline both turned puzzled stares on me, and Sally wrinkled up her nose and shook her head. Okay, so notice he gives us the proof of what he just told us. Number one, that they're humorless, or at least they don't get his kind of humor. And number two, that their apartment is early college kid style. He tells us they have the world's ugliest light fixture, and then he shows us the proof. Notice also that he doesn't tell us his wife looked mortified. He shows us. Sally wrinkled up her nose and shook her head. In the telling portion, we're not experiencing the car ride. We're not experiencing Neil and Madeline's lack of humor. We're being told about it, but he doesn't stop there. He demonstrates it. He gives us the proof of what he just told us. Often writers will stop at the telling. For example, Sally gave me a brief lecture about how Neil and Madeline were different from the people I'm used to and why certain kinds of humor might not go over. But then they'd give a scene that doesn't demonstrate that lack of humor, or at least this character's brand of humor. So showing gives concrete images. It plunges the reader into the experience. It provokes them to feel something. Now, that feeling might be laughter. For example, this made me laugh. It made me smile. The reader could also feel heartbreak or longing, fear, dread, or intoxication. When stories stick with us, what we remember is the emotional impact it had on us. It makes us feel something. But to make us feel and to feel with your characters, you need to show. Telling is still necessary. We just don't want too much of it. Here's an example from David Nichols' novel, One Day. These days, the nights and mornings have a tendency to bleed into one another. Old-fashioned notions of AM and PM have become obsolete, and Dexter is seeing a lot more dawns than he once used to. Okay, so he's telling us the general state of things for Dexter. It's summary. These days and nights and mornings. And then he moves into a particular morning. On the 15th of July, 1993, the sun rises at 5:01 a.m. Dexter watches it from the back of a decrepit minicab as he returns home from a stranger's flat in Brixton. Not a stranger exactly, but a brand new friend, one of many he is making these days, this time a graphic designer called Gibbs or Gibbsy, or maybe it was Bigsy, and his friend, this mad girl called Tara, a tiny bird-like thing with woozy, heavy eyelids and a wide scarlet mouth who doesn't talk much, preferring to communicate through the medium of massage. He's still telling here, but notice the details give life to the telling. The decrepit minicab, the stranger's flat in Brixton, that he's not sure of the name. Is it Gibbs, Gibbsy, or maybe Bigsy? He describes Tara, bird-like with woozy, heavy eyelids, and that she communicates mostly through massage. Then we get right into it. It's Tara he meets first, just after 2 a.m. in the nightclub underneath the railway arches. All night, he has noticed her on the dance floor, a broad grin on her pretty pixie face, as she appears suddenly behind strangers and starts to rub their shoulders or the small of their backs. Finally, It's Dexter's turn, and he nods and smiles and waits for the slow dawn of recognition. Sure enough, the girl frowns, brings her fingers close to the tip of his nose, and says what they all say now, which is, "You're famous!" "What are you, then?" he shouts over the music, taking both her small, bony hands in his, holding them out to the side as if this were some great reunion. "I'm Tara! 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 Hello, Tara!" "You're famous? Why are you famous? Tell me." "I'm on TV. I'm on a TV program called Large In It. I interview pop stars." "I knew it. You are famous," she shouts, delighted, and she cranes up on tiptoe and kisses his cheek, and she does this so nicely that he's moved to shout over the music, "You're lovely, Tara." "I am lovely," she shouts back. "I am lovely, but I'm not famous." "But you should be famous," shouts Dexter, his hands on her waist. "I think everybody should be famous." This remark is without thought or meaning, but the sentiment seems to move Tara because she says, "Ah," stands up on tiptoe, and rests her little elfin head on his shoulder. "I think you're so lovely," she shouts in his ear, and he doesn't disagree. "You're lovely too," he says, and they find themselves caught in a "you're lovely" loop that could potentially go on forever. They're dancing together now, sucking in their cheeks and grinning at each other, and once again, Dexter is struck by how easy conversation can be when no one is in their right mind. And then he moves into a brief paragraph of telling to give us a little more context. In the olden days, when people only had alcohol to fall back on, talking to a girl would involve all kinds of eye contact, the buying of drinks, hours of formal questioning about books and films, parents and siblings. But these days, it's possible to segue almost immediately from "what's your name" to "show me your tattoo," say, or "what underwear are you wearing?" And surely this has got to be progress. Okay, do we need to be told he's high and that he's on a path of self-destruction? No, that would be bad telling. Even in the scene's opening where we're told about the general state of things for him, it's all suggested in the details. Bad showing would simply be something like he stumbled on the dance floor, or he slurred his words as he said, "Tara, you're lovely." He went to the bathroom and snorted coke. So how does the author show Dexter's high on drugs? He plunges us into his experience from the perspective of his drug-induced state of mind. It's in the dialogue. It's in the repetition of "you're lovely." It's in the emptiness of the conversation. It's in his thoughts. We don't need to know what drugs he's on. We only need to experience it. We're anchored in his reality, which in this scene is distorted. Now, the sequence goes on for about 7 pages. It takes us from the club to the stranger's flat and back to the decrepit cab where we started. When he's at the stranger's flat with his new friends, the drugs are wearing off. Does he tell us the drugs are wearing off? Yes, but again, he doesn't stop there. He gives us the proof. People are kissing, and Tara is still fiddling with his neck, probing the top of his spine with her hard little fingers. But all the drugs have gone now, and what was once a relaxing massage is now a series of jabs and pokes. And when he peers up at Tara's pixie face, it suddenly seems pinched and menacing. The mouth too wide, the eyes too round, like some sort of small, hairless mammal. He also notices that she's older than he thought. My God, she must be like 38. And that there's some sort of white paste between her little teeth, like grouting. And Dexter can no longer control his terror of the day ahead from crawling up his spinal column, dread, fear, and shame manifesting itself as a sticky chemical sweat. He sits suddenly, shivers, and drags both hands slowly down his face as if physically wiping something away. Okay, now, do we know what he's afraid of to face in the day ahead? Not yet, but we're starting to realize what's motivating him to self-destruct. He's avoiding something, and the promise is we'll find out what that is in due time. Now, here's the thing about showing. It implies your character's inner state through the action. It's what they do, what they say, what they observe, what they think. It's in the pace, in the rhythm. There's no description of the feeling. In the first example from Joseph Connolly's story, the point of view character is aware of his inner state. In the second example from One Day, the reader is more aware of Dexter's inner state than he is. He's marginally aware, but he's bypassing it. Okay, a very common question is, well, what should you tell? Well, telling is useful when you want a brief transition from one scene to another or from one chapter to another. So maybe the character is moved to another room or another location altogether, or there's a jump in time, and telling can help that transition. You may want to tell briefly to introduce a character. In both examples, the characters we're about to meet are introduced through the telling. So the telling provides context for what's going to be shown. Then what should you show? Well, let's talk about where writers go wrong with showing. They often overcrowd their scenes with too many characters and too many characters' viewpoints. And one of the most common ways I see the story being told rather than shown is through the dialogue. Yes, the dialogue can show a lot, but the characters should never be telling the story. Now, this happens a lot where there are multiple characters in a scene and it's not being filtered through one character perspective. Whichever character is experiencing the most internal change or will have the most interesting perspective should be the point of view for the scene, and that needs to be shown. You want to show when something significant is happening, something where the story is going to take a turn for better or for worse. So to do that, you have to ask, what is your point of view character's state of mind in this scene? What's the change he or she is going to experience? Dexter starts out high as a kite. He crashes. The drugs are wearing off, and he has no drugs left, and he sees Tara quite differently than he did in the club. He pilfers some vodka from the stranger's flat. Then he gets into the cab and goes home at 5 a.m. That's where the section ends. There will be repercussions that will be revealed the next time we see Dexter, but that's what we're shown so far. You also want to ask, what is my character feeling? What's underneath? For example, with Dexter, there's a point in this scene where he acknowledges, number one, that he's dreading the next day, and number two, that he can't be alone. So what is he avoiding? We don't know yet, but you can bet the author does know. So what motivates your character through the action? Everything a character does is rooted in a feeling, not just one feeling, but several conflicting feelings. So pick any scene, pick one point of view character, ideally your protagonist, and ask these questions. Number one, what does he or she feel about this place, each person in the scene, what's happening, and about him or herself? Number two, how do your protagonist's feelings about any of this shift in the scene? Number three, what is your point of view character seeing that others don't? Add one detail that only your protagonist would see and see it in his or her own unique way. For example, the light fixture that reminds him of the cone of silence from the TV show Get Smart, or the girl in the club who reminds him of a bird. At one point, it's getting light out and Dexter hears birds. Blackbirds are singing on Cold Harbor Lane, and he has this sensation so vivid that it's almost a hallucination that he is entirely hollow, empty, like an Easter egg. Now, you can't and should not show everything. But there's bad telling and bad showing. Bad telling would be something like, he was mad. Bad showing would be, he pounded his fist on the table. Bad telling, she felt nervous. Bad showing, her nerves shot up and down her spine. Okay, so let's wrap this up. I'm going to leave you with three key takeaways. Number one, show don't tell is a bit misleading. Showing and telling work together. They complement and balance each other. You don't want too much of one or the other. However, you want more showing than telling. Number two, telling is summary or exposition, and it's a good way to introduce a new character or transition the reader into the scene. It's straight information, things you don't necessarily need the reader to intuit. It can give context to what you're about to show. And number three, showing is when you recreate one character's experience, one character, not multiple. You show when you want the reader to feel something. It's not direct. The best showing implies a character's state of mind, emotions, internal conflicts. Showing is more impactful because it's already charged with the character's emotions. So there you have it. Thanks for hanging out with me today. And if you know any writers who need some support in their writing, please share this episode or the Writer Unleashed podcast in general. And if you love what you're listening to, subscribe on your favorite listening platform and please leave me a review. Reading how this podcast impacts your writing truly lights me up and helps me create topics for the show. Till next time, keep writing, and I'll talk to you soon.